Hi, Eric Stromquist here, just back from San Jose, California, where myself and the man, the myth, the legend were out at the Realcom IBCon show. And what a show it was. So the following podcast, or the podcast that's coming up, is kind of special. Our friend Mark Petock from LinkSpring helped us co-host the show. We had two consultants and one of the best systems integrators in the country on the show. So it was a great opportunity to get different perspectives on what we saw, the technologies we saw, and how that's going to affect you as an owner, as a distributor, and as an integrator. So this week's show is brought to you by Honeywell. Honeywell is a building automation controls company that does a lot of really great things. And one of them is that they are a sponsor of the 2016 Control Trends Awards. So without enlightened companies like Honeywell and our next sponsor, the Control Trends Awards just wouldn't happen. The show is also brought to you by a company called The Panel Shop, and that's shoppe.com. They're Canadian. I guess that's how they spell it, or maybe they couldn't get the domain name. But it's Ted and Jason Houck and the team at Hepta Control Systems. And what these guys do, among other things, they're great systems integrators, but they also build incredible control panels. So why have one of your key guys sitting on a bucket building controls where these guys can build UL-listed control panels for you, design them, and specifically with the systems integrator in mind. So be sure and check these guys out. They are also platinum sponsors of the Control Trends Awards. So how do you get to advertise on the Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings videocast or podcast? It's simple. Do a good turn for the industry, become a platinum sponsor of the Control Trends Awards, and we will let you sponsor some shows as well. So we sure do appreciate Ted Houck, the Control Shop, as well as Honeywell, and we'll be getting to our other sponsors later in the week. So with that, kick back and enjoy the show.
You're listening to Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings Podcast.
With the man, the myth, the legend. Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist.
Control Talk Now, the weekly podcast with building automation and smart building control news you can use.
Now, here's Eric.
Hi, welcome to Control Talk Now for the week ending sometime in June, because we're out here in San Jose still at the...
Thursday's the 23rd, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
All right, so technically this will air next week, but we're still at the Realcom IBCon show. I am joined, as usual, by the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers.
That's me.
The man from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, man, welcome to the show. Like, I hadn't been seeing you every day for the last 5 days.
You know, it's been nothing but fun, Eric. I tell you what, we always use the term, trying to drink water from a fire hose. I feel like the fire hose has been hitting me in the face and chest for 3 days, because it's just incredible the amount of stuff we've gone and seen, technology, innovation, San Jose.
Well, it really is. And so what we're going to do this week, primarily because Kenny and I have been out of town, and we go home and try to cut his show, Control Talk Now show, our wives will divorce us. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a Control Talk Now show, and we're going to have some guests here from the conference that are going to come on. But to start with, we want to bring on a legend in our industry. If you're on Control Trends, you know this guy. You'll recognize the face. The man from Richmond, Virginia, the host of the Control Trends Awards, Mark Petock.
Anyway, delighted to be here in lovely San Jose. The wind's picking up, but absolutely gorgeous here. One of the things here, you know, there's been lots of things going on at IBCon this year. And just, you know, from my perspective, excellent turnout again. But what was the most important thing that really stood out for me was the number of first-timers who came to the event, came to the conference to get an idea of the technology that's now available. Things that we in the control industry have been doing for a while, but I think we're starting to get more folks, new folks out there looking at our technologies and whatnot. So that's a good one. So let me ask you this. I'm turning the tides today, so I'm going to be doing the interview, and that's interviewing, so that's kind of scary. But I'm going to interview these two, and then we're going to bring on some guests. So let me start with you, Kenny. Right. Now, I know you led a session, one of the sessions here that was well attended. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. It was the keeping pace with change in the HVAC, the smart connected building. So much has happened innovative-wise. You know, we're here in San Jose, cradle of innovation, Silicon Valley, you know, and in California, and everything they say about that's true. There's so much going on here. They speak a different talk So we had four representatives. Excuse me, something blew in my throat while I was waiting there. One was from an equipment manufacturer. Kevin Fascinelli was from he was from Daikin Applied. We had Lindsay Baker, who was from Building Robotics, and they're having tremendous success with HVAC engineering. In other words, human behavior is entering into our space and making an impact. We had Matt Eggers from Yardi, and Matt was a sharp knife in the drawer. He was just talking about how they save money. They go into place and software as a system has an immediate impact. It's time for the building owners to just really believe in the technology and the innovation. It's here, and it makes a big difference. The ROI is spectacular. And then we had Gary Court from Iconics. Now, Gary was a long-term member of our building automation world. He worked for many different manufacturers, mm-hmm. and he works deep down behind the curtains. In other words, he is a software expert. He's a product manager, and he combines the both and does well of a job for Iconics worldwide. So it was a great panel.
And then just out of curiosity, you know, were there any questions from the audience that really stood out in your mind share with us, you know, one, at least maybe one or two of those questions that really kind of took the panel by surprise or really stood out?
Well, I'll tell you what, Eric actually asked the first question that kind of stumped everybody. He asked one of the equipment manufacturers, of course, Kevin Fascinelli, if something goes wrong. So, you know, the push with the technology is people have to feel comfortable with it. They have to understand that if you lose a VAV controller, do you replace the entire controller with the actuator? Do you replace a chip? And at what level does that affect the service end of it and getting things back and up and running and how fast it take? The second one was the controversy on protocols. The one gentleman in our panel was touting the ability to do the gateways and deal with all the OPC, BACnet, MSTP, IP. You name that protocol, they were able to have a gateway, and now they're specializing in IoT languages and protocols. Mm-hmm. And then the other guy said protocols are dead. That they expected protocols mm-hmm. to be phased out. They expect that OEM manufacturers are going to start sending things, equipment already programmed with an internet language. It's not going to leave you any opportunity to pick or to put somebody into a silo or a one-off situation mm-hmm. with software anymore.
That truly is an interesting concept here, and I think that's something we all in the industry got to monitor. What do you think about that, Eric?
Well, I think there's a term I heard recently by actually Dave Cote, the CEO of Honeywell, called digital Darwinism. And I tell you what, if you look around at all the players that are here, all the players out from Silicon Valley, it's just amazing, the technology. There are so many people that we didn't know. For the first time at one of these trade shows, there were more people I didn't know than I did know. And I think that's an interesting trend. And then I think the whole concept of the $300 rule, which is basically, you know, real estate, if you're spending $3 on utilities, $30 on rent, and $300 is the people cost, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the focus to the environment and productivity, because if you can just get a little piece of reduction or improvement in productivity, it makes it all worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And I think being the RealCom part of it, the really cool thing about this is now you got the real estate people out here, and I mean this is what's driving the industry. So if you're not here, you're sort of, you know, you're the tail getting wagged by the dog, but mm-hmm. this is the place you want to be. So cool stuff.
Is there, you know, we've been out here, we all had a chance to walk the floor and things like that. Is there one technology that really completely stood out in your mind as being new, totally innovative, groundbreaking, and things like that?
Well, you know, as we were setting up for this show here, we went past Dave Lorenzini, who was out of the Google Glass department, worked with Google Earth, mm-hmm. and the other gentleman that was, they call him the Drone Master or whatever, he 2 years ago he did a drone presentation on stage. I think what we're seeing here now is that there's a, IoT to me means different things. To me, it means you actually put things where they belong for greatest effect, and some of the things, and not to just flatter you with the edge devices, but I saw in your with Linkspring, that product that you have now, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit more about it, and then BASSG has it, mm-hmm. where you're seeing the pushback on IoT. Instead of going up into the cloud, it actually has a better home on the edge because mm-hmm. it provides faster information, more consistent information, because it's temperature, so you want immediate response,
right.
and perhaps a more secure, application.
Well, again, to that point, and I'll get to you, Eric, to that point, the whole idea about the edge is here, it's not going away, and to be able to do analytics right at the edge, right at the source, when you need to, when you want to, is something that we, that's been our approach, and then to take it and send that information up to a cloud, up to an enterprise, when you want to, or just pieces of that. And I think that's this whole IoT factor, if you will, that's really helping drive some of the new stuff and where we're going as an industry. Eric?
Well, I think the thing that's interesting to me, too, is there's a lot of talk about artificial intelligence and along those lines, virtual reality and augmented reality, not the kind, Kenny, that you and Mark and I had back in our earlier days, but how that's just going to affect, again, the overall experience where you can have, like, you know, they've got the virtual reality glasses now where you can have a drone that can be pushing the data back down. I think that's just a whole world that's getting ready to open up and just change the way we see, hear, and feel everything.
One of the other big moments here as far as content and talks and discussions was in and around cybersecurity, of course. And it was really nice to see that become front and center, because we think it's, you know, we've talked about it, you know, for a long time now on Control Trends. But that is an interesting fact. And the point is that building owners are now starting to take note about cybersecurity. And I think, you know, the education that we all have been doing, you know, Fred Gordy, us, all of us, and others, I think is starting to resonate with building owners and some of the system integrators out there as well.
Well, I sure do. And, you know, I think it's a good segue into our first guest coming onto the show, is that you have a very important first step to make. And one is to acknowledge that you can't, like you always said, security through obscurity is a doomed approach towards cybersecurity. So you need people that can explain this conversation well enough to make people move, commit to action. And I think our first guest coming up here that you introduced, they've got a real intelligent approach, and they've got a very simpler. I have one of the scorecards, get your buildings cyber safe secure, I'm sorry, get your buildings cyber safe score. So they give you the opportunity to do a good, bad, and ugly using a very simple but important methodical approach towards determining your vulnerability and then taking action. And they can provide the steps you need to secure your networks and your buildings.
Mm-hmm. Well, our first, that's good segue. Our first guest is going to be Tom Shercliffe, principal, one of the co-founders of Intelligent Buildings. And what's interesting on the cyber side, and that'll be part of our discussion, is also the fact that they are consultants, and that the consultant side has starting to see cybersecurity as an issue and something that they are addressed. So join me in welcoming Tom Shercliffe. Tom, welcome. Appreciate you taking the time out in this gorgeous afternoon here in San Jose. And before we get into a couple things, from the consultative perspective, and again, you bring a whole new look at certain things that I do, or Kenny, or Eric, with our background and our businesses, what did you see and what really stood out at this year's conference this year for you guys?
Well, a couple of things at a higher level, and one, it was as many people as I think we've seen in a long time. It was totally packed, and then also in some of our sessions, we asked the audience, you know, who were first-time attendees, and in some cases, half or more raised their hands.
Wow!
So we have a core group that always comes back and is really pushing things for the industry, mm-hmm. and I think we had a really big new wave of attendees mm-hmm. here. And really, I think they were here to learn, but also there were a lot of people taking action. They were looking for solutions. They were going to pick somebody and do something. So I thought it was a very active conference this year.
Also, I guess, too, you know, I asked this to Ken and to Eric. Is there one thing that really stood out in your mind, just from a technology perspective, that really caught your eye, that you guys are going to keep your eyes on over the next 6 months, 12 months, and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've all seen the emergence of analytics and the maturity of it, and that continues to march on. There's a lot of runway there. But the thing that intrigued us was water analytics. And that is something that we're seeing. We've seen it, you know, big water, water treatment, that kind of thing. But what was interesting is to see solutions, and we're putting consulting time into this at the chiller and cooling tower level for how it not only relates to water usage, but how what is the energy relationship there. And what it turns out is up to 1% to 3% of your total energy spend can be wasted just on inefficient pipes in your in your infrastructure. Not only that, we've learned that there's life safety issues with Legionella, and there's asset life issues. So that is a really, really big area with very little attention that's been paid to it so far.
Well, I had heard or read something recently where they said water's the new energy. And in this whole new shift on water or concentration in water, how about conservation and conserving water? Is that part of what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a sustainability aspect to that for sure. Also, the cost of water continues to go up, so there's a business side of that. And as we just touched on, there's also, you know, when you say water is the new energy, there also is energy it takes to push water. So in many ways, that is true. So I think that is a topic that's going to be really rising. You almost feel a certain maturity in energy. It's going to always get better and always get tighter, but that is almost an accepted a topic that you have to tackle aggressively. And I think water is going to move up to be a peer of that.
Eric, have you, you know, in dealing with the various folks that you do with at Stromquist, has water been brought up? And if so, you know, what are your customers saying about water?
Well, I think for years we've sold BTU systems and water metering systems. And if you sort of think relatively about the cost of gas now, maybe into the gas cost of water. I mean, think about it. You go buy a gallon of gas, it's a certain amount of money. Go buy a gallon of water, you're paying more for the water than you are for the gas. And, you know, when that sort of dawns on you that you're doing that, and everything Tom's saying really holds credence, I think there's a great opportunity there to integrate the water-saving solutions. Obviously, Kenny and I both sell variable frequency drives as you do, Mark. That's one way you can conserve water by having the chiller be more efficient. But so I think there's a dynamic of the sustainability, the energy factor, but also the quality of water is huge. So water filtration and stuff like that could be big too.
How about Kenny from your end?
Well, you know what? I wanted to grab the microphone
before
I lost my thought. But then this light keeps bothering me. Mr. Mayor of San Jose, would you please put these lights out during the daytime? Light litter is about
litter,
here.
We are seeing it firsthand, Kenny. But you are in heaven here in light litter.
I am, but it breaks my heart because this is supposed to be the cradle of innovation and the top of the tech line here, and we got lights on everywhere. But most seriously, it's good to have analogies. But water in our area is like good Mexican food, you know. It goes in, but it has to come out, and you pay more money for it to come out than you do when you to buy it, right? But no, we do recovery, so we have to pay for the affluent water leaving a facility. Now has become a major concern because you're getting charged. There's an automatic assumption that if you had 100 gallons of water go in and you can't prove that some of that was evaporated or consumed or whatever, you pay for that same amount going out. So we've had a recent influx of water meters. So I agree 100% that the whole concept of water is rising in importance. It was like a well camouflaged, taken for granted utility. Now it's become a front row.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So I've got a question for
your
you. Too.
Come on.
I've got the mic now, too.
You're in control. We're in the control business.
Well, Therese took it away. Therese Sullivan took it away from me yesterday, so I'm going to give it back to you in a second. But sort of here's the question, and Kenny, you sort of sparked this. We really are at a great place of innovation, Silicon Valley, right? So they think differently. They talk differently. They work out of different paradigms than we do, right? And, you know, Tom, I want to ask you a question because you're dealing with, you know, teams of people that make decisions about smart building and investing in buildings and so on and so forth, everything from CFOs to CIOs. As a matter of fact, part of your business model and part of your premises, you've got to get all those people on the same page. So my question for you is, what paradigm are they operating out of that maybe keeps them from taking advantage of this technology? And what paradigm should they shift to in terms of their thinking about smart buildings, intelligent buildings?
Well, real estate's in a transition process. I mean, it's really one of the last industries to take on big data and analytics and even simple things like local area networks. So we estimate real estate's about a decade behind the other industries that have already adopted these technologies, healthcare, finance, manufacturing, et cetera. So they're really just catching up. And part of the challenge is they are historically a very fragmented industry. So you've got asset owners and building managers and contractors and property managers and facility managers. So the ecosystem is very fragmented, and it takes a while to get that going. So we are seeing awareness at the top of that value chain, and it's just beginning to push down, evidence what we talked about, the activity this year. I want to make another comment on that when we're talking about water, is that, you know, one of the, related to this topic, one of the things in water is not just the technology, which has been a little bit lacking, but even that system of the water treatment contractor and the BAS contractor and the facility manager, that whole people process is not quite aligned. So just to take a micro topic and then also answer for your macro question.
Very well said. I'm going to give the mic back to you, Mark. Oh, one last question for Tom. Probably not the last question. But, you know, one of the things that, one of the biggest jobs, quite candid, we got in Atlanta. It was kind of interesting how it happened. We're in the thick of things in the job. And my integrator called up and said, the owner said, if you can get us on Control Talk now, or Control Change, you come do a video after the job's done. He wanted to know if he knew me and if he could get him. He said, he'll give us the job if we do that. And so we did the job, and afterwards we did the interview. And afterwards we got to be buddies. I started talking to him. He said, well, he had one of the biggest environmental law firms in the country in one of the building we were in, and apparently they were giving him a hard time. They weren't doing enough about sustainability. So part of the package we provided was, you know, a big board talking about how much energy they were saving. And it made me realize, at least in his case, how important being perceived as being sustainable and green was part of his brand and part of his marketing. My question for you, are you seeing more and more people that's becoming part of their brand?
I think that has certainly occurred, and it's even sometimes, large tenants have made it a requirement that buildings have certain sustainability certifications before they move in. I think what is interesting in that area is that it is going from a stereotype of a LEED, where there's a one-time designation, to more of how are you continually sustainable. And I think particularly for you guys here can appreciate that's really done with technology. And so even this is, we had some sessions at the conference here where we talked about, the role of technology in sustainability. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about caring and even behavior or even recycling and some of these things that we do behaviorally, but it's how does technology make sustainability an ongoing thing and a measurable thing as well.
Just one more thing on the sustainability issue. One thing I've noticed is that especially public-facing companies, companies that are out there on the stock exchange that are public companies, that they truly have invested a lot in sustainability, and they are actually reporting it to their shareholders. I'm seeing it in annual reports and things like that. So I think that's been part of the drive and the initiatives behind sustainability. But to your point, when you guys go in and begin talking with a potential opportunity, and you're talking about the strategy first and foremost, that's a foundation. How do you bring up this whole idea of sustainability, and do you also bring up water immediately?
Yeah, it's a good point, because sustainability is better off when it is part of a way of running your business, as opposed to the strategy or the plan.
Right, right.
And I think that's been the most effective way to do it, because a lot of times we talked about technology in sustainability. Mm-hmm. Well, that can also help with your overall operating costs and other things that may not be sustainability related. Mm-hmm. So I think it is, ironically, a more sustainable approach to make sustainability part of the whole strategy and the whole plan. Now, having said that, we have had large Fortune 100 customers come to us where they've hit a sustainability wall, and they needed technology to punch through. Mm-hmm. And yes, it would save energy, but they were more focused on their carbon numbers than it was on operating costs or energy. So just an anecdote where they said, we've gotten rid of space, we've changed behavior, we've done all these things for sustainability, and now what? And they really wanted what we thought was energy technology,
right.
But for sustainability purposes.
Good. Well, I'm going to turn the subject, turn it a little bit, because Kenny mentioned about what you guys are doing in the cyber area and how you have made that part of your, and I can't remember the actual diagram, I've seen it in your office a couple times, we're in your quadrant. It's all part of your. So tell us a little bit about this. You've got a cyber audit, if you will. Tell us about that cyber report card type thing that what you guys have instituted, and tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so sometimes in the cyber topic, everybody gets all caught up in firewalls and penetration testing and all these IT things that can be important. But our surveys really cover that plus the other aspects that are critical. We talked about the people. So What is your internal policy? What are your internal networks? What are your contractor policies? You could have Fort Knox on a cyber protection, and if the guy or gal that has the keys to the door leave them on the table, then we've got a problem there. So this is really a more of a 360-degree view of what are the cyber risks, and we have had more and more companies ask us to do these surveys because, again, back to this fragmented industry, they don't even know what's in their closets or what the policies are. So it's literally a visibility question about going there and seeing it and touching it and documenting it and asking it a few questions.
Exactly. And I've heard that a couple of times, this, you know, what's in my closet? And, you know, you ask, you get 10 people in a room and you ask, do you really know what's in your closet? And you might get one person out of that 10 that says, yeah, I really know what's in it. And the rest are the nine, no. So Kenny, you know, other, you know, with respect to cybersecurity, and again, we've talked about it time and time again, and it's going to be continuing to be a subject that we have to talk about, because I think it's one of these issues that is one of the most pressing issues that we in our industry face. Did you see a couple things in some of these cyber breakout sessions that really stood out in your mind?
I sure did. I saw the, I think it was after the general session, the keynote session, I went to a rollout where they were talking about facts and figures and how much cybersecurity now costs. The cost of cybersecurity attacks globally is $45 billion. A lot of that's lost money because they're buying software programs, antivirus programs, because they really don't get it. We saw that there's new verbiage now in contracts that systems integrators have to be very, very careful about because they're now putting you in of having the burden of risk and responsibility. You're supposed to, if you're touching a network, you're supposed to have an expertise equal to or above the existing network that you're working on. And then they actually have clauses in there that says you're responsible for any and all breaches. You're responsible for any repair required. You're responsible to notify the public, make apologies. In other words, you better get really good at some kind of you have to have a stance. So the, you know, and this is a layered thing. So you have the, you know, from the C level down to the people that aren't, we were told that there's agencies that hire people going into office buildings. They have no access control. They can walk around anybody's desk. And if they see an open computer, and they give you three strikes. But if you're caught three times not complying to the cybersecurity rules of your particular organization, that's grounds for dismissal. So, I mean, we're seeing a whole new opportunity for, and to me, and I hate to say it, monetize it, but I think this is where we all play a role. I think like some of the top master systems integrators, like these guys that they're coming on next, they have solutions. I know that you all have some physical solutions with CyberPro. I mean, everybody has got to make a move, and it's a teamwork. It's layered. So there's no single party, and the systems integrators can no longer walk away from it. They have to incorporate that into their knowledge base, and they have to become maybe not experts, but they certainly need to know what they're doing and then know who are the experts to get them involved.
So Tom, Eric. Yeah,
One question for both of you guys. So, you know, the cybersecurity, we've all been talking about that for a while. We've seen the doom and gloom. It's like, you know, the cyber criminals are way ahead of everybody else we hear. But in the general session, I know it was Cade Metz or one of the guys was talking about the use of artificial intelligence and how that might be the answer to shutting these cybersecurity organizations down. I want to ask all three of you, does that give you hope what you heard there?
I think it does. I mean, you know, technology and automation always is a big help. But I'll circle back around to where we started with. That can be diluted by policy or noncompliance. So I think you're always going to have the will and the organizational approach to that, and even workflow around it, and then let that technology, even AI, do its part. So I think that's I think it's going to play a key part, but we can't wait for it.
I would echo what Tom said. It's, you know, cyber is happening now. We can't wait for all this great AI stuff that come around and things like that. So You know, we got to address it now. And I'm going to get to Kenny. Well, go ahead, Kenny. I want you to answer that.
Well, AI, I think, is I did get a good feeling to answer your question, Eric. I did. Because I follow that gloom-doom speech pretty well, and I like to have hope and believe that, you know, we could crowdsource solutions like that, because it's no one person, no one agency. So we need collaborative effort at the lowest and highest levels. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we can, now that they've got tremendous processing and computing power, that they can track things globally, because a lot of these problems are not local problems, and therefore we don't think about them locally, but we're all being subject to them. We're all paying the penalties for it and the price. So to see that we have some sort of a team, that our government says we can't do it. You assert, I go on there every day, I get all the notifications. And basically everybody is saying that there's too many the black hats and not enough white hats. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough dollars being thrown at it until they actually do that and budget money. We're fighting mm-hmm. a linear battle against exponential forces.
So Tom, let me ask you this. When you get into an engagement potential with a new client, and you bring up the topic of cybersecurity, which I am sure you do as part of your learning process or the process that you guys do, what's the reaction with most of the people? Are they, yes, we got to do something? Or, you know what, I'm not worried about cybersecurity, especially on my buildings and my building side. I don't really care, it's not going to happen to me. You know, the types of answers we've heard for several years. And so from your perspective, when you bring that up, what's the general reaction?
Well, almost no one has awareness of it, as we've all been talking about. And I want to say what Kenny said earlier is that, just awareness and acknowledgement is a step. I don't even, much less all the solutions, just acknowledging that. And it's hard to deny the facts when we say you have X number of buildings, you have X number of control systems. Statistically, most of them are connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. It's just true. So there's acknowledgement of that. But I'll tell you what's interesting is that whether you're talking to the facilities folks or the IT folks, when they hear and get that awareness, they realize that it is so untapped and untouched mm-hmm. that it becomes a hot potato. It's almost like they want to put their fingers in the ears. I'm not listening to a thing you're saying because they've done nothing. Mm-hmm. And from a department level, do I have budget? Do I have people? Do I have to make a case for this? And so I know it's a little bit regrettable, but the first thing is it's so big and I'm not touching it today. Which is why really you alluded to earlier, it has to come from the top. It's an institutional risk issue, and it's a core mission risk issue. Mm-hmm. So I think it really has to come from the top so that it's not a budgetary turf kind of worry.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to close out this segment. Tom Shercliffe, Intelligent Buildings, really want to thank you for joining us today on this beautiful afternoon. It's been great, and hopefully, we'll see you at the Control Trend Awards coming up January in good old Las Vegas. A good plug for the Control Trend Awards. Couldn't help it, Kenny.
Indeed,
So, thank you.
Enjoy that.
All right, here we are, still at IBCon, lovely downtown San Jose. Mark Pitok with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. We turned the tides on these two today. I'm doing the interviewing and trying to encourage the conversation. Got another guest. We just heard from Tom Shercliffe, who's on the consultative side. We've got an integrator and one of the best in the industry, a master integrator. Please welcome to the show Jeff Hout from Automated Integrated.
Hey. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Jeff.
So Jeff, you've been here at RealCom along with with us. From your perspective, again, we're trying to give different perspectives of industry, what's going on, what you saw here. What did you see here that kind of stood out in your mind? What was new that maybe caught you by surprise or whatever? Just kind of tell us your overview of the show and what you learned.
Okay, I think the thing that intrigued me the most was that the time for analytics is on us. We see a lot of buzz about it in there, and it's time for buildings to start to, I guess, cooperate with their owners to keep them up to date, keep them efficient. So I thought the all the buzz about analytics was really interesting. Another thing I thought was interesting was the facility management software, the property management software manufacturers. they're still really focused in on leases and not necessarily the data that the buildings themselves are giving them. So there, it's like this open loop management idea, and I thought that was really intriguing, that the property managers just see them literally as a box, and mm-hmm. And then it's up to the chief engineer of the building to operate it. Mm-hmm. So maybe analytics is going to start to give us a way to bridge that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
how about, is there, you know, again, looking at, you mentioned analytics, and I think, you know, from the integrator perspective, and you talk and you deal with, you know, colleagues and other folks in there, we've been talking about analytics for now. Do you feel that the general integrator has been reluctant or whatever to adopt analytics into their offerings? And if so, what do you think causes that?
Oh, you know, analytics is an interesting concept. I've talked to some of the other master integrators, truly, I mean, really good integrators, and I think a lot of them haven't necessarily seen the case for it. And I had one actually comment to me at the show that at Linkspring Exchange that I'd made a case finally for analytics to where he understood why they needed to sell it. And it really comes down to the point density in the buildings, the number of points per square foot. We're at AI, we're starting to talk about a new metric of number of points or megabytes of data per kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. And it's just different ways to look at the data being generated inside buildings. And what they hadn't seen was that the amount of data that's coming out of these buildings is so big it's unknowable by human beings anymore. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable, and that's the problem that analytics solve for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to get your opinion, too, because one of the things we heard at one of the breakout sessions was how they were using analytics, and I think it was like either an apartment rental space or a hotel. I forget the exact example. But literally they were tracking the number of people that were logging on looking for a room or looking for an apartment versus the number of traffic that was coming in, the number of leases that were going out. And they were adjusting the prices based on that analytics, those analytics. And the point being, did a 2 to 3% increase in rent or lease space was huge to the bottom line. And I think another example was that I think Uber employs analytics that if you got a peak time, you can choose to pay a higher rate, or you can wait until you. So, are any of your customers thinking in that way yet?
Oh, not so far as I've seen, but I think that's the new world. That's the world that we're faced with. Is that if something is in demand, you're going to be paying more for it. So, mm-hmm. I know that if we're busy, I raise my gross margin on my jobs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, if I'm going to give a number on a job and I'm going to have to hire or work overtime, I raise my gross margin.
Right.
So same type of philosophy.
As a master integrator, you know, how do you view you guys as differentiating yourselves in the marketplace? What as far as just kind of bringing the technology knowledge, bringing the business side of it. What's your sort of almost your secret sauce? I don't want you to give out the secret sauce that you lose opportunities, but just some advice to the integrators, a part of the Control Trends community.
I think the key thing is you've got to look past the VAV controller. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our fellows in the building automation community are really stuck with the concept of working inside a certain manufacturer. You know, if you're a Honeywell guy, you do Honeywell. They're risk averse. So I would say that what you need to do is take a look at the market. Look at where you're at and say, where do I want to be? What's it going to take to get there? And business plan for that. And look at that and say that if I'm willing to take risks in certain areas, mm-hmm. then I'm going to have reward for that. So if you can use, say, one of the things that we do, the reason we're automation integrated, is we integrate legacy systems. If you've got a broken old building with a legacy control system that's just not getting it done for you, that's where we live. We live in retrofitting those and adding a Niagara, a Genesis mm-hmm. front end to those. And that can be high margin work, but then there's recurring revenue, remodels, service contracts, things like that that come after. That's a great space to live in.
Jeff, I'm sorry. It's always a pleasure to hear you talk, and you have that professorial style of, I mean, it's fun to listen to you because it's got, you got a lot of wisdom and content, and I think
Wait, excuse me, interruption. I think we should nominate
Kenny Smyers for president of the United States. So there you go. Sorry. Couldn't resist on that one.
Oh, dear. A second. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Donald, watch out. Yeah. Hillary, watch out. So.
Threw me off my...
sorry.
No. No, seriously, the bona fides that you have. In other words, you didn't start in HVAC. You started in real estate and banking, I believe. So you knew the financial end of the equation before you knew the equipment end of it. And then you had an IT first. So before you got into the HVAC side, you actually knew networking and IT, and then you went security first, I believe, so that you came to our where we reside primarily as an expert in many fields. Tell us about your bona fides and your background.
Well, you did get a little mixed up. So I started out 6 years Navy, pushing submarines around. So I was a nuclear power plant operator. I got out, I built data centers and call centers for a big company in Oklahoma City. So I did do networking infrastructure and central plants and those kind of things. Went to school nights, GI Bill guy. So got my engineering degree and then went and did engineering work, classic design with a company that did a lot of Corps of Engineers work. So did that, got tired of drawing convenience receptacles and doing lighting calculations and those kind of things, and left and started a controls division at a security company. And then about 5 years ago, left and started AI.
I was close.
So, yeah, you were pretty close. So, but from the very beginning when I started AI, one of the key differentiators that I saw coming in the market was that we needed to be able to do software development. We needed to be able to do API to API integrations with these applications. And that was in the very first business plan. And I think that's been the thing that has accelerated us into the market like we've grown.
Right. Well, just a follow-on question. The term master systems integrator to me now has grown in magnitude. A new clarification because one of the breakouts was saying, please don't say you're a master systems integrator if you can't do this, this, and this. You get one chance at this, and so a couple of guys were asking for what clarification. So there's a very few percentage of contractors that can actually do A to Z within the building that are masters of the network. No fire and security, access control, CCTV. So I think that's a clarification that to me was a revelation that we sometimes oversell ourselves. How do you prevent, for the benefit of the control trends community, how can you still get out there, get your name in consideration, but you partner? Do they work with people like you when they need those squares that they can't fill?
Absolutely. We say that we do all the electrons on the right side of the decimal point, so all the little wires, right? So so we do burglar alarm, access control, video surveillance, CCTV. We offer some of the higher tier security products out there with identity management, PSIMs, those kind of things, in addition to what we do with Niagara and building automation, lighting control, and all of those. So yeah, we would love an opportunity if you guys have a job. Eric and I were talking earlier, we believe in the integrity economy. So if you bring us in on a project, it's your customer, we would love to work with you and make you succeed.
So just one last thing to discuss. So again, without naming your particular client, you want to share a particular case history that might come to mind that was overly challenging and what you did to meet those challenges?
Sure. I think one of the most interesting case studies we've got is it's a company that's based in Oklahoma City that has a set distribution area for their product. And it's a retail chain, fairly large. And they, in doing a webinar, not a webinar, excuse me, in doing a seminar with them, Linkspring had written a Twitter module for Niagara. And it was available. So it was just a way for you to put together a private Twitter feed for your building. And in talking with them, they were saying, so you mean you can do things that interact with the internet? And it resulted in us developing a piece of software that did voice recognition, integrated GPS on a truck. We deployed tablets in all their delivery trucks. And we did geofencing on their facilities so that as the truck driver arrived at the site, the lights were on, and they were safe to make deliveries after hours. And it doubled their coverage area. It brought them into several new major markets. So what we did was we took a small piece of software that we wrote for a customer, and we gave them the ability to almost double their coverage area. They're going to grow because of a piece of technology that's based on Niagara.
So, Jeff, you know, you're in the trenches every day. Cybersecurity, we've talked about with other guests. It's a big topic at the show this year. What's your take on cybersecurity? How do you guys approach it as an integrator? And what should owners sort of demand that their integrators do to protect themselves?
Oh, this is Pandora's box. So, so my take on cybersecurity is you need to be one step better than your customers. And that can be a pretty high bar. But the things that are simple that you need to do is have a policy. Sit down and write a policy on cybersecurity. Keep records of your customers and the notifications that you need to make if you terminate an employee. Get cybersecurity insurance in place. Make sure that you've got coverage, because you don't want to be left holding the bag for a $2 million deductible for your customer. Make sure, there's a saying, inspect what you expect. Make sure that you've got virus protection deployed. Train your guys on what phishing and spear phishing are. All of those simple patty cake things that you can do to improve the security of your customers, go ahead and get those in place. Shift yourself out of that guy where you're thinking about completions and work on your business itself and get better at what you do. So things like don't put Tritium Niagara in every darn controller, guys. The backdoor password should be the first thing that comes off. Build yourself a template Niagara station that this is how we're going to do business, and that password's out of there, by gosh. Make sure that your guys have unique passwords and they don't share them. It's work and it's cost, but those are the things that are going to differentiate you in the market. If your customer finds their building on Shodan search engine and Tritium Niagara's in there, you just lost a customer.
Good. Well, Jeff Houck of AI, we want to thank you for being our guest here in RealCom 2016. And we'll bring on our next guest shortly.
One last thing. So for all you internet folks out there, Jeff will be playing Atlanta July 7th.
Yes.
He'll be at the Stromquist training room. And we'll be live streaming Jeff's presentation. Real quick, Jeff, can you tell our audience something about your presentation you're going to be doing?
We're going to be showing our new Internet of Things application. It's BlueForge. BlueForge provides the ability to connect the data generated by a device, its digital identity, with its physical presence. So it's a suite of products that's intended to help our customers rapidly develop IoT applications. So what we're going to show, and what we'll do a little pre-announcement right now, is we're going to release a free online automatic backup for Niagara devices, so supervisors and Jaces, and we'll announce that next month with Eric.
You heard it here on Control Trends. You got to go to controltrends.com. We'll keep you posted on it. Jeff, thank you so much, and I'll let Mark do the official outro because he's the hostess with the mostest.
The hostess with the mostest. Jeff, again, thank you. I think we've got one more guest waiting in the wings, and we'll take a two-second break, and we'll bring him in. Hey, Mark Pitok back at you with Ken and Eric in San Jose at RealCom. Want to thank our last guest, Jeff Hout of AI. We appreciate his perspective. I know, Kenny, for our next guest, another gentleman, Executive Vice President Sean Klan from Intelligent Buildings. I know, Kenny, you've been talking to Sean a little bit here, so I want you to add a few little color commentary, as they say.
Well, I just know that Sean has a passion to solve problems. It gets him to work early and he leaves late because he really enjoys his work. He has a passion for it. And his most current thrust has been data visualization, taking it to the next level, making sure it works, giving people different looks for different C-level players.
Mm-hmm. All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, Control Trends. Sean Klan, come on and join the group here. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yep.
So, Sean, one of the things that I know, in addition to what Kenny had just mentioned, is, high on your list and what you work with your clients is on the occupant experience, the tenant experience. We're starting to see that more and more become, it's gone from the kids' table to the grown-up table, and we're starting to see more discussions. Tell us a little bit about it from your perspective, what you see, what you're doing, where we're going with that.
Sure, Mark. That part actually really excites me because, with 10, 15 years in this industry, we've spent a lot of time consulting around the business case around smart buildings, right? So we've had the opportunity here at Intelligent Buildings to build some financial models and business case for some of the world's largest global portfolios. Mm-hmm. And that's always been focused on what is the value proposition, the business case for, you know, the topic of smart buildings at large. Mm-hmm. Well, 10 years of that, we've vetted that out. We've proved that out. So the industry in this conference showed that we're moving beyond that. Right. And the next thing that's moving beyond that is saying, well, let's focus, again, back on the occupants and that tenant experience, mm-hmm. right? So, again, we're shifting mindset a little bit from, you know, ROI and dollars and things like that, because that's been proved out now. Mm-hmm. We know that. We mm-hmm. have that data here in the industry, which has been fantastic. And now we're really trying to connect what everyone's daily life is at home, right, mm-hmm. back to how their daily life is inside of the office, right? Mm-hmm. So we've become accustomed to smart thermostats and smart cars and mm-hmm. smart TVs and different experiences at home even. Mm-hmm. And we want to bring those same experiences to the office, mm-hmm. right? So now how do we look at the technologies that are inside of our office spaces, which when you really look at it are just an extension of web pages back to some type of a software right, sure, somewhere, sure. And how do we use that to empower the tenants and the occupants? So this is a great revolution that's taking place in the industry around thinking a little bit differently mm-hmm. and about, again, about how these experiences, these use cases, how we can tweak and massage the technologies mm-hmm. to really create a better environment for the occupants. Mm-hmm.
But to that point, you know, we talked about the value, the business case, and we've made that. But then tying the occupant experience to the business case. So, for example, we've heard, and they're starting to do more and more studies on, that if a tenant in an office is happy, they love the environment as far as the climate and stuff, they're going to work longer hours or harder hours, be more productive and things like that. And I've also heard where, from the business side, where that being able to maximize the lifetime value of a tenant adds a lot of business value to the real estate folks, so they don't have to continually change out and advertise for a new tenant. That keeping a tenant in their space for a longer period of time is more profitable to them. Have you guys looked at that from that perspective?
Yeah, I think we have. I mean, I think it's no secret that the cheapest tenant to acquire is a tenant that you already have, right?
Exactly.
So keeping them happy is kind of number one priority. When we can look at little, small, subtle things, like giving them control over the environmental conditions of their space, lights, blinds, shades, HVAC, it's a simple thing to do via a web page and technology that's been around for decades. It's just getting through that trust factor that before it was only certain individuals inside of the organization that had access to that information. And extending it out to the occupant gives them the ability to have, you know, better control of their space. I mean, that's one of the number one things that, you know, well, there's lots of factors why tenants move out,
sure,
right? I mean, relocations, outgrowing the space, things like that. But sometimes it's just looking for new, fresh experiences, you know? And when we're in a competitive market, really depending on where the economy's up, whether it's in an up cycle or a down cycle, sometimes you need to just look at that extra competitive advantage to differentiate yourselves from the competition. And small things like that can go a long way. Mm-hmm.
So again, this whole idea, this notion about the occupant experience, is these types of discussions at the C-suite, or is it at the facility side, or is it both? Where would, you know, the Control Trend audience, where would you suggest that they begin those types of conversations?
Yeah, so no surprise that, you know, it impacts everybody, right?
Right.
So you look at, you know, how we're using those occupant experiences to, you know, better utilize our conference room space or our office space in general, right? So that's impacting, you know, people in leasing and people in different business units in terms of determining how much office space they need and how much floor space they need. You look at facilities and doing a simple thing, again, to empower the tenants to lower or raise the temperature in their space, right? There's been studies, and we've seen it firsthand with our customers, that, you know, the number of hot-cold calls, a very simple thing like that, goes down, you know, tremendously, and just a little bit of simple empowerment like that. So it impacts all stakeholders, and, you know, in order to create those experiences, you often need to be able to have the integration between the different technologies, mm-hmm. and of course, that's where IT gets involved. You need system A to talk to system B, and often it's enterprise systems mm-hmm. talking to facility systems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an open dialogue that everybody needs to participate in. And yeah, I'd say the more people you can have in that conversation, the more creative you can get with these use cases.
Mm-hmm.
And we often call them, you know, integrated systems of operations,
sure,
or integrated system sequence of operations, or system experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And these experiences are just a new twist on the existing technology that we've invested mm-hmm. in for many, many years.
Ken, I'm going to turn it over to you. I know you had a couple things you wanted to bring up.
Again, it's a great dialogue, and you know, I love the idea that human engineering is emerging with HVAC engineering, so we're getting better results on that 330-300 rule, where that the productivity, the retention, reduction of absenteeism. We heard some pretty cool things about IoT, so my question is, one example we had was there was a study done by Intel using our IoT information, so contextualization, all the smart devices. People seem to be leaving by tens and 20s every day in an office building around 3 o'clock, going out the primary lobby entrance and walking a short distance to a coffee stand. So they learned from there that they brought a coffee kiosk inside the lobby. It was doing enormously well. People were happy. They were away from the office less. What are some of the real tangible, the making it real? What has IoT done that you could say, you know what, this is an example. We solved a people problem or some kind of a problem using IoT.
Yeah, so just great statistics around data that's either, been around for a long time or just a fresh perspective of it. So occupancy data, maybe new technologies to leverage people counting and figure out how the space is being utilized. I think that's, obviously, we saw at the conference that it's a big mind shift in thinking about how are the spaces inside the real estate being utilized, right? And whether it's better asset utilization, better space utilization, that's a key factor. And we've seen all kinds of examples from how space is not utilized, less on a Friday or the day after Thanksgiving, and all these good studies on Fridays during the summer, right? So when we know that information, again, we can react with it, we can control the spaces better, we can plan better. So it's just an extension of taking that existing information and turning it into actual information.
When all this innovation and technology is there, as you described it again, it's probably been around for a while. What is holding us back from marching forward uniformly to taking advantage of all this technology? What are the pushbacks that are still latent in organizations, and how do you overcome those?
Yeah, it's really, it's an education and a change management thing, I think are the two. Yeah, I mean, I think one, you have to educate people that it's a different approach, right? Absolutely. It's a new way of doing business, a new way to design buildings, new way to construct buildings, new way to operate buildings. It's not fundamentally different, but it's different than the way we've done things for many years. And we've seen that if you do it on one project, there's a bit of a learning curve associated with it, but then the individuals associated with that project take that learning to their next project and their next project, and it just becomes easy, it becomes status quo. So I think we're just in a place in the industry where we're just trying to get over that first hump, and as we get through these first projects where there's a little bit of a learning curve with it, we're gonna just see it be the standard, the norm. So
I think Eric's got a couple.
Yeah. So Sean, the first time I met you, you were the moderator, if you will, at the RealCom IBCon boot camp. And I think for our Control Trends audience, because we got a lot of integrators out there that are trying to meet real estate's demands, what sort of things are, first of all, talk about the boot camp, and what sorts of things are the real estate folks learning there that our customers might be interfacing with?
Yeah, no, the boot camp's been a great opportunity and experience. This year we're on our fifth year, right? And I think when we started, we never thought we would be doing, introduction 101 to smart buildings for 5 years in a row here. And I think there's no reason why we can't do another five of this. It's a great opportunity for people who don't really, are looking to get just the initial education on what is smart buildings into this space. What can it mean? What are the opportunities? We start very simple, what is IoT? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's a great place to start. And we sometimes go from 0 to 100 and we start throwing around acronyms, and we need to kind of just step it back a little bit and kind of define out what are we actually talking about. So the boot camp's really about, first educating what is the topic, what is the space, who are the players. It then goes through a process to say, what are your objectives and your strategies? If you're going to take on this project, how do you go about doing it? One of the things we did this year, and we did it last year as well, is we brought back some individuals from some large property management companies that had been to boot camp in previous years, and they had learned something, and they had been sitting in the same seats that the attendees were this year. And 3-4 years later, they came back with some amazing stories of what they were able to accomplish in the industry. So it was really kind of bringing that back full circle to say, sit in the seats here, get educated, go out, take some action. It's really a call to action. Come back 4 years later and tell us about your successes.
Awesome. One comment on the boot camp, and I've attended it, and this year I was in and out time permitted. But I also look at it over the 5 years that you've done this, things have changed in our industry. So I think, you know, for example, when we went to the very first one, and I believe I was at that one, it was about connectivity, it was about integration, it was about interoperability. Today, I believe that that's a given. But you brought in, and Tom mentioned it earlier, we talked a little bit about data analytics. We didn't talk about data analytics in boot camp, the very first one, or whatnot. So are there things that you've added to this whole content area, if you will, that we didn't have in the first one or two? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So I think, you know, over the last 5 years, the industry has gotten just a little bit more confusing and noisy, right? Because there's new solutions out there. Fault detection diagnostics, visualization, you know, single pane of glass technologies, optimization softwares. There's a whole host of great vendors out there providing a lot of different solutions. And in a lot of cases, they're similar, dissimilar. They have overlapping features and so forth. But one thing we've learned is that it's impossible to do an apples-to-apples comparison in this industry because there's no two softwares, technology, solutions out there that are identical, right? So it's a very kind of snowflake-like analogy and evaluation process. So one of the things we did in boot camp this year was we really boiled down to what the building blocks of a smart building program and strategy are, right? What are the fundamentals from IT convergence to end device protocols to, you know, the feature sets that you're going to use, whether it's visualization technologies or optimization technologies, cybersecurity, all those different things, right? So we had the building blocks. And we took the attendees through a process of really, you know, identifying what are the foundational elements of a strategy, what are the structural elements, and then what we identify as the finish elements, right? These are things that are very unique to your organization, but your only ability to get to those finish elements is if you first lay the foundation and the structure. Mm-hmm. So that really enabled the attendees to kind of get a roadmap, if you will, of how do you lay all these different building blocks together so that you end up with a sound solution at the end of the day. Mm-hmm.
I think you had.
Well, Sean, one of the things I think you guys do so well, and again, Tom mentioned it before, is those building blocks, the foundation. I think people gloss over that. I don't think they understand how important it is to get, like, the players. Like, we always think it's all C-suite. You got to make sure you got the finances, you know, but actually you got to get everybody. It's like a band. It's like a string section, the percussion section, the horn section. Inside of a building, you have eight, nine, ten possibly different interest groups that if they're not behind it, they retard the process. They don't get it, and they don't agree with it. And then just tell us then, too, how do you go around making those learning sessions easier? I really get I just really appreciate the fact you guys do it modularly and you do it simple. You speak a very simple talk to explain to these people what's going on and how to set objectives.
Yeah, I think, you know, with your first question on the building blocks and the stakeholders, I mean, that was something that, you know, to be really honest, we only got to that understanding with 10, 12 years of experience. When we started the conversation, you know, we thought we had all the answers with just the network connectivity piece or just the open protocol piece or whatever it was. But it was really the evolution and the journey that we all went through over 10 years of consulting in this space that brought us to identify that there's a lot of different kind of secondary building blocks and secondary components to an overall arching strategy, and they're secondary stakeholders as well. When we first started the conversation 10 years ago, it was just facilities and maybe IT. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that for many years.
Sure,
you guys
absolutely.
Know for many
absolutely.
Years at this show, we talked about facilities and IT. Mm-hmm. But then as we got more sophisticated in the programs that we worked with our customers, we realized what other stakeholders we need to bring in the mix to be successful, whether it's sustainability, leasing, asset management, real estate, energy. There's all kinds of different stakeholders that have a voice in this, and it's really important that we get them involved in the conversation very early. And it's been a learning process, even for us as consultants. It's been a learning process, and what we strive to do is take that learning from one customer and from many, many accounts over decades of experience and bring that to each individual new engagement that we have.
One last question I want to ask is, we've seen as, you know, we've introduced new technology to the industry, new approaches, all that, we get the foundation and the building blocks. Have you seen the value proposition change over the years? And if so, what is the key value proposition from the consultative side that you think is important today that you talk to your clients and prospective clients about?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the value proposition has definitely evolved, and it certainly changes from customer to customer. There's no one single value proposition. It's going to be a little bit different from everybody. But what I can tell you is that what the common themes we see from a value proposition are, yes, the tried and true are always there from an energy standpoint, energy right. reduction, operational reduction. That's there, and that, again, that's kind of table stakes mm-hmm. on the conversation. The next level of value proposition is kind of where we started the conversation with the tenant and occupant experience,
absolutely.
Right? People right. are more sure. focused on that. And the other aspect of it is, you know, and I know you've talked about this a lot, and we've talked about a lot at the conference, but cybersecurity,
yep.
right? That's again, a new value proposition that it's one of those things that if you don't do, the risk of not doing it is so great,
right?
So you have to pay attention to that. So I think those are some of the new value propositions that we're starting to pay attention to. And the last one I'd say is a little bit of you know, innovative or die kind of a philosophy mm-hmm. or just keep current with your peers and status quo. I mean, in one of the sessions we talked about today, it was, you know, is how long is it before smart buildings technology becomes, you know, analogous to your elevator? You
right.
expect an elevator in a building.
Right.
You expect a fire alarm system in a building. So it's not that far along mm-hmm. where you expect your technology to be the same in the building.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, one more. So with this idea about expecting, do you want to go out on the limb for the Control Trend audience and say, by such and such a date or in X amount of years, it will be expected?
I don't think it's that far away.
Okay, good.
I think
good.
It's going to be, I'm going to say it's under five.
Okay, good.
It's under five.
All right, folks, you heard it here. Smart building technology everywhere within 5 years. Sean Klan, Executive Vice President, Intelligent Buildings. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you,
Mark. And I want to go ahead and turn it over to the gentleman who owned this program. I'm going to go ahead and give it to you, Eric.
Okay. All right, so there you have it. Another week on Control Talk Now, the Smart Buildings videocast and podcast. A very special thanks to Mark Pitok for filling in and being me today. It gives me lets me know what I can aspire to.
No,
so
around,
great job, Mark. Really do appreciate it. Tom Shurtleff and Jeff Haupt. And who else do we have? And Sean Klan, obviously.
And that one other person. But I hear sirens. Did Kenny do something last night?
We have to recognize our special thanks to videographer Rob Allen.
Special thanks to the man behind the camera, Rob Allen.
To Rob, we need to get an image of his socks that he is wearing today. They are definitely Control Trend socks that everybody needs to write in for.
Well, the battle in Silicon Valley is who's got the cooler socks.
Yes,
Young Gun Rob Allen or Josh Bradshaw, who we just met this week from Silicon Valley. So Josh is now the king of Silicon Valley and Therese Sullivan is the queen. They'll be coming on the show keeping us updated with that. But with all that said, thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate everybody checking us out. We are going to check out here in Silicon Valley. So with that, remember, be bold and stay in control.
Indeed, Eric.
All right, awesome. Guys. Well done. Great. Sean, thank you so much, man.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Well done.